This is CliffCentral.com.
Welcome to the business section of our Business Masterclass. I'm Richard Angus, CEO of the finance team, your part-time financial executive solution. Joining me in studio today is Safia Boulay of New Habits, Making Shift Happen.
How's it, Richard?
Also joining us in studio from our previous segment, Cynthia Schumann of the Ethics Monitor. Thank you, Cynthia.
Great to be here.
Last week, we spoke to Manisha Prem, who is founder of M-Prem Inc. Great interview with her. So if you haven't listened to that, download that podcast from our website. Today, we are pleased to have with us on the line our guest, the Midvale Local Municipality Executive Mayor, Councillor Bongani Baloyi. Councillor, welcome. Thank you for taking the time to be with us today.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Thank you. Now, Councillor, the reason why we asked you to join us today on the show, we have a monthly feature on ethics in the country, and it's a six-month feature that we are going to be running. And this month, our feature was on workplace ethics, and we happened to see the results of the audit that was done recently, or the outcomes of the audits from the Auditor General. And I noticed with great interest some of the results for the Midvale Council and some of the great work you and your team have been doing there. And so we thought it would be great to chat to you a little about what you're doing within the Midvale Council, and particularly how you've been able to achieve the results that you have been able to achieve. However, before we go there, I also, in preparing for the show, I did a little bit of research on yourself, and I found a very fascinating background and some insights into you as a person. I understand that you're the youngest mayor in the country. And so, yeah, we just wanted to get a little bit of a brief background on yourself, if you are willing to share that with us, and your journey to being mayor of Midvale. Can you give us maybe a 5-minute background so our listeners can know a little bit about you?
Yes. Well, sure. What do I say in 5 minutes? Can you put it this way? I was born into politics through family. My family has been quite involved, obviously, in the Eastern Township with the African National Congress. I grew up in a family which was very political and quite aware and quite vocal. So as we grew up and my mother moved to this side of Midvale, she also was quite a spoken person and fought regularly with the local leadership of Midvale around 2000. And eventually they recruited her into the Democratic Alliance and she became a councillor. So I did not want to be part of politics because I saw what it did to the family and loss of life and assassination of uncles and all these things. So I was quite comfortable to just stay away from it, and my interest at that stage was just entrepreneurship. So I've been in entrepreneurship from the age of 9, selling hats, selling sweets, and selling anything I could make money out of, from as long as it was legal, obviously. Anything I could make money out of from a very early stage.
And, that's a good thing.
From youth. Definitely. So then through, taking my mother to the meetings, eventually I was recruited because I also had opinions. I was getting tired of people just beating around the bush. Because it was take a meeting that could have gone for 30 minutes into an hour because people would not say what needed to be said. So eventually I spoke part of one of these meetings due to frustration because I needed to go somewhere because I was using my mother's car and I had to pick up and go and hang with mates in it. So eventually they recruited me and told me this is just a thing you do over weekends, and they liked you. And I developed an interest of politics and interest in my community, with an even raised awareness of what's happening and what I believe needed to happen. And so I preferred being part of the team or part of the people who are doing something positive and who have the necessary authority to implement the type of change that they saw fit. So I got addicted to that and started seeing that I could help people and there would be outcomes. And I thought maybe this is something that I should be doing and just try and focus more on. So I was still busy with some studies as well. And then I was recruited, employed by the party to set up structures on the ground and campaigning and all sorts of things. And then it was 2011 and now I'm a councillor. And I've got all of these innovative ideas of frustrations of local government because they're turning quick enough. And now I'm on the other side where I must make things happen. And I've given the portfolio of development planning and housing and the economic growth of the area, which was a fascinating, incredible portfolio for me. It taught me a lot of things about local government, but at the same time, You just get a better appreciation about the local government space and the serving of your people, the frustrations your people face, the frustrations you have as a people whom people expect to do things very quickly. So now you understand this whole dynamic of being within the local government space. So I was given the opportunity to work with some incredible people who were my predecessors, who established a solid foundation, which I inherited from them when they left to pursue other opportunities. So the success you see now wasn't started by me. I just took an initiative where it was and did a few things and improved on a number of things. But the foundation is what was laid by my predecessors. And when I took over, it wasn't how do I recreate the wheel again, but it was what do I do in areas that we don't perform really well to improve that and enhance and maintain what we do really well.
Mm. Well, Councillor, if I may commend you, I think one of the things that I always look to in leadership is there's always the temptation when things are going really well to say, it was me. So you very graciously acknowledge the impact and the input that your predecessors have had in your space, and I must commend you for that. Now, if I look at the last round of audit results that have been released, I mean, the one thing that stood out for me immediately was that Midvaal was heads and shoulders above the rest of the Gauteng municipalities. In fact, please correct me if I'm incorrect on this understanding, you in fact had a absolutely spotless audit report for Midvaal, if I'm not mistaken. Is that correct?
To an extent. We have some issues that were raised by the Auditor General that we need to improve on. Mm-hmm. Which is some of these are legal cases that are still pending where there's uncertainty and obviously risk towards the municipality. Mm-hmm. But I think generally across the board, this is probably one of our better clean audits. One of the things we try and eliminate every year is to eliminate the repeat findings. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to improve all the time. But ultimately, a clean audit means nothing if our people don't get the sense that life is getting better for them on the ground.
Yeah, well, I think that's actually such a valid grounding. I mean, I guess, you know, I'm taken in by the audit report, and you remind me that ultimately you're there to serve the people and to make a better society for the people of South Africa. So, yeah, a very, very valid point. Now, I mean, obviously within the context of any organization, getting good clean audits is always a challenge, and we've just had a conversation with Cynthia about the whole question of workplace ethics and how these help you achieve, you know, a good quality organization. I mean, what do you believe has been the reason behind behind the audit results that you have been able to achieve? What has driven the results? I mean, obviously you've talked quite eloquently of the your predecessors and the good base that they gave you, but what else has helped you get those results to where they are at the moment?
Look, when I took over in 2013 August, one of the things we set and tried to do with the municipal manager was to identify areas where we're not performing well at. Mm-hmm. So the benefit for me to just focus on those areas and not worry about the management team is that we're stable and we have incredibly competent, incredibly talented people as well who put the community first above their own interests. So many of the challenges some people may face within local government, for me, is not even a challenge. I don't question the ethical behavior and conduct of my senior staff, including the municipal manager. So I don't need to worry about that. So we can have conversation and energy and direct energy towards the most pertinent of things that we need to engage on, such as what do we need to improve on. One of the things we did was the performance management, which we felt that was much more reactive and not proactive. So we weren't happening as things happened, which reduced or limited our ability to mitigate risk and obviously be able to respond quite decisively. So now when you go to performance evaluation, I can predict the outcome already because I've interacted with the performance aspect and monitoring and management of performance regularly. In fact, I do it every second week in the month to try and get a sense of the municipality is. So we looked at performance, over and above performance, we've got a stable management senior team, but it, most importantly, what also had to do is clarify the role between politician and administration, because often these roles could be blurred. So people need to understand what is their role and obligation so they don't overstep their bounds and start doing the wrong things and starting to use their influence in areas where they should not be doing that. So if you have a solid team, sound management, ethical performances, I mean ethical leadership as well, and people understanding their role clarification and looking at deeper into the issue of performance management and how to improve that, which obviously looked at areas where our people physically experience the service delivery at the most basic level, then we improve on performance. And then we saw that as we making this an organizational culture, now we start more, we're much more driven. So it's an accepted norm now in Mixlr that we approach things that way. So no one questions it now. So it's an established practice that we try and do. So we don't just aspire to keep getting these clean audits, but at the same time, we want it to mean something. So it can't just be that we're financially sustainable and viable, but our people are living a different life and cannot correlate the governance aspect of a municipality with the initial situation or circumstances improving for the better. So a number of things that we've had to do over the period of time. And also we had quite a frank and honest discussion with the Auditor General after the 2013 result, where we felt that the result we got just confirmed, I think at that stage we had gotten our 10th consecutive unqualified audit. So when I speak of the foundation led by my predecessors, I mean, that's there. It's actually factual that one of the municipalities consecutively getting unqualified audits, a step away from the clean audit.
Yeah.
So it's a combination of factors that we had to deal with as a management, but most importantly, we had to improve on the performance management aspect and obviously clarifying the plan. If you've got a garbage plan, you get a garbage outcome out of it. So to crystallize and then ensure that you've got a strong, solid plan to implement, with tangible outcomes.
Well, I must say that I listened to your let's call it your clarity of thought around how you manage in your environment. What I did find exceptionally pleasing in that statement that you've just made is that you focus on performance management and measurement of your team to ensure that you deliver the desired outcomes. And I think, you know, there's always the challenge in any organization that you get lost as leadership in all of the noise and you forget that ultimately it's about execute and get it done and get it done right the first time. I'm constantly reminded of a saying that a gentleman by the name of Ronnie Watson, who was the previous CEO of
West Bank,
and he always used to say, he said, if you don't have time to do it right the first time, when are you going to have time to correct your mistakes? And I think that applies so well in all organizations, and particularly in areas of public service. You know, if you can't get it right the first time, you're going to have a challenge.
Yes. Well, I was going to say what leapt out for me, I mean, there was a huge amount in that that's very positive, but what leapt out for me from an ethical perspective that I think is so notable is putting the community first. And I think in this regard, I speak about the ethics of leadership, and it's lovely to have such a positive public sector example that we're discussing now. But when I speak of the ethics of leadership, I always say that please let's recognize that leaders, by definition, have greater power, authority, influence, choose a word. But how they use their leadership influence and their leadership power, do they use it for the upliftment and the empowerment of others? Or at the other end of the spectrum, do they use it for self-gain? And I think the fact that the councillor is describing such a wonderfully ethical culture, I think comes back to a key foundation point of the community serves as their first priority. I mean, that's a wonderful ethical statement.
Mm. Councillor, I just want to go back to something right at the start of your statement where you said, you are so confident in the ethical behavior and the behavior of people like your city manager or your council manager and the team. That's a very, very positive position to be in as the executive mayor. Do you find that, you know, I mean, obviously you've got great experience with these people and they've allowed you to develop that level of trust and respect in their ethics and how they behave. Is that something that you think is missing in other environments in around us? I mean, you know, I think you have a very unique position to be able to say that so unequivocally. You know, you're in a really, really strong position as a leader to be able to make that statement so clearly.
No, definitely. I think that one of the things that you don't find that common within local government, and you see the change, it's quite a fluid environment. So you may find a mayor who's the flavor of the month coming in this week. 2 years later, another municipal manager goes, and so the changes become quite fluid, which upsets the balance of order and things of municipality. So you don't build, there isn't issues of sustainability and continuity, which becomes a very big problem. But one of the leadership lessons I learned initially is that, firstly, I may be the executive mayor and have influence and powers to do certain things and blah, blah, blah. But effectively, I'm a new person within this environment, and I've got a deficit of knowledge. These are people who've been with the municipality for ages, and they understand the entire environment. So do I come in and be Mr. Man with authority and you shall do the following? Or do I go into a situation or create an environment where we convince each other either way? So it's not about authority, but it's the strength of your argument to convince any person, whichever direction, which goes with on the team, because it's not an environment where authority reigns supreme, but it's strength of argument. So the bond and the type of discussion I can have with my team. And if you walk in there, you wouldn't even think that the mayor's around you. You just think that the management team having frank discussions about the issues, because that's what it is about. It's about the issues and the strength of argument to convince me either way or one way or the other. I also hold very strong views, but it's within those discussions where we convince each other either way. So if you don't have that as well, and just using authority, you shall do the following. You miss out on an important part of learning and building relations with people. So you get to a stage where I don't even trust the commitment and the ethical behavior of our municipal manager, because he's conducted himself in a particular manner consistently. So he hasn't done anything to show any, to make me question his behavior, his conduct within the team members as well. So it is definitely a fortunate position to be in. But the downside of it is that, I mean, a number of my team is quite nearing retirement soon. So I'm trying to sponge as much as possible from them. I'm trying to energize them so they stick around a bit longer to ensure that if I'm gone, there isn't a vacancy or a crisis now that, I mean, he's gone and the management is gone, now we have a problem. So we need to start even the renewal of leadership and the succession planning. So we hand over, I can have all the same opportunity my predecessors they had to hand over a clean organization, a healthy organization, a financially sustainable and viable.
Now, I'm going to pose a question or a scenario to you that we actually discussed in our previous segment. And I'm going to put this to you because I believe that you would be able to give some great insights to people who are faced with this challenge. And the scenario was one such as this, where, you know, somebody would be facing perhaps in their, you know, in their organization, it could be a company or parastatal, an instruction coming from their superior where they said, you need to do the following. And the person who is being instructed knows full well that the instruction they are being given is actually, let's call it unethical or inappropriate given the scenario. So they're being told you will do something that they know internally, they know that this is an unethical call that's being made or an unethical decision that's being made. But their direct superior is giving them a direct instruction. And they are now faced with this challenge of, do I follow the direct instruction of my superior and, let's call it, tick the box on that side? Or do I stand up for what is ethically, I believe, to be right and face the victimization, the ridicule, the pressure? I may even face disciplinary as a result of me refusing to obey a direct instruction. What would your view be you obviously have a broad experience as a leader, given what you've achieved. How do people deal with that sort of thing in the workplace and in an organization? I mean, what would your advice be to somebody who's dealing with that quandary?
Look, what I often look at in cases like that is if I'm requested to do something which is not consistent with my moral value or my ethical belief, then it's definitely for me a no-brainer. It's just to say I'm not prepared to do that for the following reason. And again, it helps if the instruction is not verbal. So if you also ask the person to put it in writing, so you have something to use at some stage to show that this is actually not in consistent with a number of things. I mean, if it's also in writing, it allows you to respond in quite detail and to illustrate and demonstrate why that is ethically wrong. So we forget that, I mean, paper trail is quite significant and important, and you may be victimized now, but the paper trail remains. So you, there's a potential or possibility of you being vindicated much later because of on the strength of a paper trail.
So for me, it's just simplifying
that if it's not consistent with ethical belief or views or moral or value system, don't even go ahead with it.
Yeah, well, I love your comment of put it on a paper trail, because my experience, when the instruction is given and it isn't ethical, the last thing that person wants to do is put it on writing, because they know what's potentially going to happen next. So I think, the individual can avoid the, let's call it, the disciplinary elements thereof. Obviously, we get back to the questions of, so am I then victimized or ostracized by my leader and my team? But I think, Safir raised the point, you have to make a decision. What was your comment? You said you have to make a decision about whether you want to be part of this social system.
So the fact is that we are mammals, we are herd animals, we are part of an ecosystem, but we are never ever choiceless.
Yes.
We remain choiceful.
But I think the important point there is yes, as executive mayor, one is in a much stronger and much more secure position than the junior employee who really is sitting with huge personal obligations and cannot risk having that job compromised. They are much, much more vulnerable to the challenge of having that unethical instruction. And therefore, again, it comes back to the huge importance of leadership, that those who are not nearly as vulnerable, who are much more visible, they need to be making those choices and very loudly and visibly.
And I think, Councillor, I mean, you clearly are setting the pace, definitely, yes, in Midval on that. Now, Councillor, if I may turn for a moment to something else that I picked up when I was looking at your results and what you've achieved. There was a very clear message as well that Midval, in fact, has one of the lower levels of unemployment in Gauteng. And I know unemployment is a challenge that we all experience, and it's a global phenomenon, and never mind a South African phenomenon. But we have specific challenges in the South African context. Gauteng has its fair share of significant challenges in terms of employment. And yet, you seem to have achieved a lower level of unemployment than the environment around you. And I wondered what the connection is between good ethics and good behaviors in the council space and potentially the relationship with things like unemployment within your environment. Do you believe that those two are connected?
Certainly I do. So, I mean, leadership starts at all. So if we're not managing the municipality in a way which creates confidence within the private sector and within residents who want to move from Sandton and come and live in Midval because of the management of the area and the beauty of the area, and also getting the feel that things that they trust the local leadership. So all of that starts with leadership to set the tone. So that's definitely how we manage the institution ethically, speaks to the economy side of it. Because people must make a decision where they're going to invest their money. Once they do that with us, then they're in a marriage with the municipality for as long as their infrastructure is here. So they need to have the confidence that, number one, when they do so, they can quickly get to doing what business does, which is doing business without being frustrated by a cumbersome bureaucracy and red tape unnecessarily, and also being frustrated by the municipality trying to impose people to partner with them because they're coming into their municipality and it's the cousin of the mayor or the mistress of the mayor. So they must have the sense that when we go there, we will have minimal interaction with government unless it's necessary. And if we need to have that to get decisions, we'll get decisions quickly so we can get on with our business and employ local people here as well. So it starts with leadership, and there's definitely a big connection of the two. So one could even say, I mean, if you look at the national position we have now, it's also a direct spin-off of what's happening at the national level. So people rather remain with money in their bank accounts than invest in the country because of uncertainty and not confidence in the country, irrespective of whether this minister comes back with a 6-point plan tomorrow or 14-point plan tomorrow, immaterial. So you don't see those key significant signs which are needed.
Yeah, I think that that's a really noteworthy comment. And what for me it illustrates so very well is that when you're looking at sound and ethical leadership, the benefits extend all the way down the line, as you say, even to something that is so vitally important as reducing unemployment.
Mm. Now, Mungani, the question that I'd have for you is, what does the future hold for Midvaal? You've obviously got great plans. You've got a great track record. What are your areas of focus and growth?
Well, that's the exciting bit. So we just recently reworked our integrated development plan, also called our IDP, and relaunched the municipality with a new vision. So now we impacted the new vision and helped us to crystallize and understand what our core business is. Our new vision is that we want to inclusively serve the needs of our people. So everything that we do, whether it's by growing the economy or serving our people in particular or delivering services, it must inclusively serve the needs of our people. So the areas of focus for Midvaal, number one, for our location in the City Bank District, we realize that Midvaal has the potential to be the anchor of development for the entire district. So to be the point in the most southern part of Gauteng where it will contribute significantly or in fact over above its fair share to the Gauteng economy within the next 7 to 10 years. How do we do that? Number one, looking at areas of manufacturing. But the key component of manufacturing that we're looking at is manufacturing, which speaks to our farming sector industry as well, because we're looking at how we connect all the dots from our agriculture to manufacturing to a product which leaves the municipality, which must be beneficiated locally to the extent possible, and looking at innovation as well. So we're also looking at ensuring that we can feed Gauteng, so that when you go to Pick and Pay or Woolworths food, whatever vegetables you buy, majority of those would have a footprint from Midvaal here. So we see ourselves as the anchor for growth and development in the City Bank region, and we see ourselves as the leaders of what we have termed the rise of the Vaal. So we believe that we'll be able to kickstart the rise of the Vaal anchored by Midvaal performance, anchored by the governance of Midvaal, and the opportunity we'll be able to open up for our people. But at the heart of it is to create livable spaces for our residents, not to overcomplicate this, because we want our residents to be able to live in a plot in Midvaal, away from the densification of Johannesburg, to drive down 30 minutes from the city, anywhere in Midvaal to Johannesburg in the city center, come back after being frustrated with traffic nuisance, hooting, come back home here with much more serene, quiet, but still within quick reach of Johannesburg. So we want to offer a lifestyle. So coming to live in Midvaal is not just coming to live here. It's a lifestyle opportunity. Mm-hmm. Where if you want, you would have the opportunity to have your two chickens, your two mistresses in your plot, and live a very decent and comfortable life. So we're trying to simplify that, but at the basis of it is to ensure that the material life or the circumstances of our people improve, and their quality of life must improve and always be enriched.
Councillor, I'm moving to the Midvaal.
Yeah, I was going to say
sounds wonderful.
You've got a few people in studio who would love to join you as residents. Our guest today, and that's all we have time for. Our guest today, Midvaal Local Municipality Executive Mayor Councillor Bongani Baloyi. Thank you very much for taking the time to talk with us today and to lead by example. We really do appreciate your commitment, and on behalf of South Africa, if I may say, you are a leader that we can certainly see. We wish others would aspire to be more like. So thank you for your great example. We really do appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Next up, stay with us, the Youth Leadership Platform.
This is CliffCentral.com.